You are listening to a sermon by Evan Kreider, recorded on Sunday, December 13, 2015, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
The lectionary of Advent has so many rich readings, and not just those for the four Sundays of Advent. In looking through some of the daily readings, I came upon two chapters of the prophet Habakkuk. I did not even know how to spell Habakkuk, and Janice pointed out nobody seems to name their sons Habakkuk. I was impressed by how appropriate some of the thinking is for our times. Habakkuk likely lived around 600 BC, but to appreciate his time, let's back up 150 years. By about 750 BC, Assyria was the reigning country in the Fertile Crescent, and the capital of Assyria was Nineveh, an enormous city whose walls, archaeologists tell us, stretched for 100 miles so that they could encompass all of the fields that were necessary to feed the 600,000 people that lived in Nineveh. And then, using slave labor, they built those walls, archaeologists tell us, 40 meters high. That's 120 feet high. And it was so wide at the top of the wall that you could have a swift chariot be pulled by three horses side by side for this 100 kilometers. This was a safe city. The northern kingdom, Israel, had formed a kind of buffer state between Assyria and Judah. But the northern kingdom fell to Assyria in 722, about 100 years before Habakkuk. Although Judah was spared, it had to pay a punishing amount of tribute to Assyria every year. Judah was therefore essentially under the sphere of Assyria, but had limited freedom to govern locally as long as the tributes were paid. After a series of weak kings, Assyria itself started becoming weaker. And then, it seems, almost without warning, the Babylonians arose as the next power. They invaded Assyria, and they did the unthinkable. They destroyed Nineveh. In 612, when Habakkuk, I think, would have been an adult, Habakkuk possibly did his writing after hearing of the rapid rise of this Babylon or Chaldea, and hearing that the Chaldean armies were sweeping the Fertile Crescent. Surely Judah would now fall. Indeed, Babylon captured all of Egypt in 605, 7 years after taking Nineveh. And then 20 years later, it seems they did a mopping up operation, getting the little countries, and in the course of that, they destroyed Jerusalem and basically took care of Judah in 586. And thus it was that the Babylonian captivity or exile was underway. So this may have been one of the last books written before that exile. It may have been written in exile. Nobody knows. You see, the whole book of Habakkuk is a collection of different writings on different themes. And the entire book is poetry. There's no history in it. The book was well known to New Testament writers, except for the writer of Revelation, who occasionally quoted from it, but without naming their source. Habakkuk asks some ageless questions. Habakkuk clearly believes that two things are real. the world is real with its politics, rich people against poor people in the country, rich nations against poor nations in the world, the strong. The world is real. It's not pretending it's not. But Habakkuk also believes that God is real, and he will not let go of that. But his problem is, how do you fit these two realities together? How in the world can you fit what's going on in the world with what I think God is? In times of severe stress, in particular, it seems like something has to give. And it seems that either God is giving, is not interested in the world, or maybe he's just absented himself from the world. Habakkuk tries to make sense of his world, crying out in faith to his God, who he refuses to forsake. Now, in his imagination, Habakkuk argues with God. Habakkuk wants to encounter a real, living God now, not just a God from stories of olden times. Part of the book of Habakkuk also asks another puzzling question. Why does God seem to use bad people to punish bad people? Or more specific, why does God use really bad people to punish somewhat bad people? And I think there's one other thing to remember as we think about Habakkuk. For Habakkuk and the Jews of his day, life was it. That was it. There was no heaven. You don't go on to a greater world. You live through your children. And so if God does not act now, what's the point? Habakkuk is divided into three modern chapters. Chapter 1 is a dialogue between the prophet and God. Habakkuk describes some of the societal evils and injustice, and this is answered by God, announcing that these evils and injustices will be punished. Habakkuk concludes chapter 1 asking, well, how could that solution possibly be fair? How could a just God ever do such a thing? Chapter 2 is altogether different. Habakkuk now waits for God to act. He stands keeping watch, which is an Advent theme. And the Lord answers him in a vision, trying to help Habakkuk see the rich and powerful Babylon in new ways. And in that vision, Habakkuk imagines, verses 6 and following, that Babylon's captives eventually are able to taunt the Babylonians themselves. And so we have a series of woe oracles. However, those woe oracles could apply both to Babylon and to Judea during his time. In his vision, he imagines that even the Babylonians will ultimately fall. Chapter 3 is Habakkuk's prayer. Chapter 3 is basically a song, and that means it's a song to be sung with music. And we have specific instructions to that, just like we have Selah, so I won't read those instructions since we're not singing it. In chapter 3, God's working in the past is reviewed as a way of possibly reassuring Judah. God is so powerful that God is over all of nature, and God really is over all the nations. In 3:16, it seems that Habakkuk and Judah now know that the feared Chaldeans are on their way. The city waits, trembling with terror, even the rich and the powerful within it. And in verse 17, the highlight of the book, even when everything goes wrong, absolutely everything, I will still rejoice in the Lord. Verse 19 recalls Psalm 18:34, which we heard today. And if you would turn in your bulletin to the page that has nine boxes, at the bottom of that page, I've compared three passages: 2 Samuel 22, Psalm 18, and Habakkuk 3:19. He made my feet like the feet of a deer. And you can see the parallel structures in those three. And Samuel says, and set me secure on the heights. He's using the metaphor of the deer not as an animal which can flee and get away from trouble, but as an animal which can be in the treacherous heights and still have secure footing. Even though things look dangerous, the animal is still safe. It's securely grounded. But Habakkuk changes it a little bit. He says he enables me to tread upon the heights. And one author that I followed most closely said he would use the word trample on the heights, which has other implications that maybe you are going to become victorious. If you find that you cannot let go of the book Habakkuk, just try to imagine. There are nine boxes there that show you the beautiful way in which this is structured. And if you follow the Roman numerals going around, that takes us through the book in order. And then you can see the balance that is given to this poem. It's not something you'll hear, but it's something that is there. Habakkuk chapter 1. I invite you to follow along. Or not, as you wish. The prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law, Torah, is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that right justice is perverted. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Then they sweep past like the wind and go on. Guilty people whose own strength is their God. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? Oh, you have made people like the fish in the sea, like sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net, gathers them up in his dragnet. And so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to receive to this complaint. Then the Lord replied, "Write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright, but the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. Indeed, wine betrays the enemy. He is arrogant and never at rest. Because he is as greedy as the grave and like death is never satisfied, he gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, 'Woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. How long must this go on?' Will not your creditors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their prey. Because you have plundered many nations, the people who are left will plunder you. For you have shed human blood, you have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, setting his nest on high to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork will echo it. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk, so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink, and let your nakedness be exposed. The cup from the Lord's right hand is coming around to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. The violence you have done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you. For you have shed human blood, You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Of what value is an idol carved by a craftsman or an image that teaches lies? For the one who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, "Come to life," or to a lifeless stone, "Wake up." Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There's no breath in it. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. Now repeat them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and his praise filled the earth. His splendor was like the sunrise. Rays flashed from his hand where his power was hidden. Plague went before him. Pestilence followed his steps. He stood and shook the earth. He looked and made the nations tremble. The ancient mountains crumbled, and the age-old hills collapsed. But he marches on forever. Now, I saw the tents of Cushan in distress, the dwellings of Midian in anguish. Were you angry with the rivers, Lord? Was your wrath against the streams? Did you rage against the sea when you rode your horses and your chariots to victory? You uncovered your bow. You called for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. Torrents of water swept by. The deep roared and lifted its waves on high. Sun and moon stood still in the heavens at the glint of your flying arrows, at the lightning of your flashing spear. In wrath, you strode through the earth, and in anger, you threshed the nations. You came out to deliver your people, to save your anointed one. You crushed the leader of the land of wickedness. You stripped him from head to foot. With his own spear, you pierced his head when his warriors stormed out to scatter us, gloating as though about to devour the wretched who were in hiding. You trampled the sea with your horses, churning the great waters. I heard, and my heart pounded. My lips quivered at the sound. Decay crept into my bones, and my legs trembled. Yet, I will wait patiently for the day of calamity to come on the nation invading us. Though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vine, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Savior. The Sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to tread on the heights.